Aren't you a technology supplier looking for deal flow? Then you should try our new platform, Connect. It's designed to help buyers and brands find the best tech solutions to match their campaign requirements. It's free for buyers to use and for tech suppliers to set up an account and start applying to campaign briefs. Set up your account today by visiting exchangewire.com/connect or email us at info@thewirecorp.com.
An Ad Tech Podcast special focusing on the most important topics in ad tech and martech. Hello and welcome to another special edition of the Mad Tech Podcast. Today's recording focuses on audience addressability and more specifically, how this is being redefined in the rapidly changing world of marketing and advertising. I chat with Amy Williams from Goodloop, Jacques Edling from Starcom and Emma Newman from PubMatic. And we talk about how brands and publishers are starting to adopt new tools and techniques to reach audiences, how this is being underpinned partly by legislation and the disappearing third-party cookie, but also by a growing sense that the industry needs to improve its moral position where the consumer is concerned. You'll be disappointed to hear that we don't exactly solve the challenge, but it's a really interesting discussion anyway. Here it is. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this special edition of the Mad Tech Podcast. We're going to be discussing redefining audience addressability. So specifically, we're going to be talking about how brands and publishers are finding the audiences that they desire at the moment, since I think it's fair to say that pretty much most of the tools which the advertising and marketing industry has traditionally been rely on to identify, reach and engage with audiences have shifted fairly fundamentally. Let me begin by introducing my three fantastic guests for this week's podcast, starting with Amy Williams, CEO and founder of Goodloop. Goodloop, which is an ethical advertising platform that enables charitable donations in exchange for consumers engaging with ad formats. Hello, Amy.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And Amy's already shared with us that she had a green smoothie for breakfast and it wasn't very good. So
I've had my spinach.
He's hoping that it's, you know, onwards and upwards from here. And Jacques Edling, who is programmatic operations lead at Starcom. Hello, Jacques.
Hi, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Very delighted to have you joining us. And Emma Newman, CRO for EMEA with PubMatic. Hello, Emma.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Welcome. And I think, Emma, the last time that I had you on a podcast, I seem to remember your driveway was being
tarmacked. We had the builder situation, the dog kicked off, the teenager walked in demanding food. Yeah. And I was hoping that this time it would not be like that, but the teenager is still here, the dog is still here, and I don't have my driveway being fixed, but my washing machine is being fixed. So really, anything could happen.
Let's jump into the conversation. The backdrop for this is, you know, that there's been significant changes in the industry, certainly over the last sort of 12 to 18 months since the implementation of GDPR. This creates an environment where the industry is very much focused on sort of upholding and protecting user privacy, placing the consumer at the center of the advertising transaction, making sure that we're adhering to legislative requirements around data privacy and consumer protection, but also focusing on ways in which the advertising transaction can happen around the focus of first-party data, moving away from a reliance on third-party data, which we know is soon, availability of which is soon disappearing. So that's the kind of backdrop for the discussion. Maybe starting with you, Jacques, your point of view on how brands are sort of currently navigating the challenges of audience addressability, given all of these industry changes.
Yeah, sure. You know, we haven't quite got to all of these changes yet. So there's a lot of discussions going on. There's a fair amount of uncertainty. There's a lot of investigations going on, a lot of conversations, and quite a few tests that we're running. We're trying to, you know, see what is going to be the impact, trying to make an assessment, because every client's going to be different, right? So we know that things like multi-touch attribution might be affected, or dynamic creative optimization might be affected, or all those kind of things where you would traditionally use a cookie-based or one-to-one kind of system. Now, we still, you know, rely on the platforms that we use and leverage. So if you go into, you know, the like of a Google or Trade Desk or whatnot, they've got incredible DMPs built in today, where we can take client first party data and we can look out and we can see, right, what are those segments comprised of? So those capabilities are still largely intact and we're still using it. We also often look backwards and say, right, what came from the previous campaign? You know, what was the targeting? Kind of what kind of insights did we get out of there? A lot of these platforms have very good audience analysis tools where we can pull out a lot of information. So whilst we're still kind of, you know, waiting for the storm to hit, we haven't really seen any impact in our day-to-day operations as to how we're approaching targeting and addressability. But that's not to say that, you know, we can kind of continue unimpeded. We need to kind of look forward and say, what's next? How are we going to address the problems once we get to, you know, the final new world in February 2022? What's almost great about this is that we're starting to talk more about collaboration. We're starting to talk more, you know, in a single kind of room where we're saying, right, I want to talk to the DSP, the SSP, the publisher, the client and the agency and bring them all together and kind of how can we solve problems, right? And I think from that front, while we are taking a privacy first approach, we are moving ahead in a much better future where the quality of the data and consent is going to be much better.
Do you think that's in part as well because some brands are being quite front-footed about the ways in which they organise themselves, and certainly they're you know, much more focused on the use and application of their gathering first-party data and making sure that it's usable and, you know, thinking through the entire process of how they use and apply that?
It's a mixed bag, you know. So when we talk about the solution, one of the comments that always comes up is it scalable? How well has it been adopted? How, you know, is it going to work? Now, we don't really know because a lot of it is fragmented. And the same can be said from the buyer side. If you look at clients, typically across the board, from different kinds of agencies, so performance-based, brand-based, there is quite a mixed bag of how prepared clients are. There definitely are some that are leaning in more than others. There are some that are better structured and far more, you know, focused on this problem than others. But it really depends kind of what is the impact going to be to your brand, right? How much are you reliant on the current ecosystem? And what are the impact points that are going to deprecate what you are currently looking at that could potentially be your key performance driver, your KPIs? If those things are going to disappear, you need to find an alternative. So it's a mix at the moment. I wouldn't say that, you know, all buyers are getting it right. I wouldn't say everyone from the tech side or from the publisher side are getting it right. I think we're all having conversations and we're having more of these kind of get-togethers where we're trying to understand the implications. And that's a wonderful thing because, you know, it ultimately brings brands and publishers closer together. And that's a great thing.
Emma, I bet you've got an interesting perspective on that, the world of bringing brands and publishers closer together.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's potentially going to be a theme running through this entire conversation, which is around collaboration and really test and learn, right? Take this opportunity. We've got a window of time. I actually said to somebody the other day, I hope we don't see almost a duplication of what happened with GDPR, where literally a week before GDPR was coming into practice, you know, publishers were still saying, well, I haven't got a consent management platform. And I'm sort of sitting there going, oh, okay. Well, I'm not sure I can help you with that. So I do think that, you know, that there is this window and people have learned from, okay, we've got an opportunity. So let's take that opportunity to work together as an industry, have these conversations, be much more collaborative. We'll also take this opportunity to, you know, to test and learn because not all solutions are created equal. And that's not that one is better than another. It's just that in certain circumstances, one might be more efficient than another. So we're certainly spending our time encouraging advertisers and publishers to explore the entire audience addressability landscape and then to really start to experiment with identity and data solutions so that they can test the efficacy of each strategy and then see what yields higher percentages in terms of addressable audiences. But it's not just about that. It's also about making sure, yes, obviously we're encouraging that, but we also have to help facilitate that, right? We can't just go, oh, everybody go test and learn and come back when you've figured it out. You know, we very much see our job as one of also facilitation and partnering and helping. And so we've developed a suite of products that really support both publishers and buyers to do this testing that we've been talking about. I think that, you know, if you think about our Identity Hub solution, and that's really been designed to help publishers you know, better manage all of these identity solutions so that they can do this A-B testing and figure out what's going to work for them and what isn't going to work for them. Because it's all very well saying, well, you need to go test, but we also need to help them to do that testing. So I think that's really important from a sort of a buying and a data owner, because I think we forget the data owners in this as well. There's another stakeholder here, which are the data owners themselves. You know, how do they, I guess, surface their data so that both buyers and publishers can take advantage of that, you know, and use it to increase their addressable audiences and also increase the return on their ad spend, because that's obviously important as well. So, you know, we've developed Audience On-Call, which is a data platform that is designed to improve the way that marketers and data owners can transact using digital data. And then there's a thing that we almost seem to forget about that went very sort of, that became very unfashionable in this world of the cookie, which was contextual. So contextual targeting has been around forever. As I said, it sort of became a little bit unfashionable, but I don't know about you, but I've certainly seen over the last few months a lot more airtime given to contextual targeting now. And I feel that that's certainly having a little bit of a renaissance. So, you know, it's not a one size fits all, and it's not just a type of identity solution. There's a multitude of things that, you know, people need to test.
Amy, what's your point of view of, you know, the ways in which both sides of the industry are approaching audience addressability at the moment?
I think that it's quite evident consumers don't want us tracking them and using their data. And the consumer is so often left out of this conversation. We talk about brands and publishers like there's no third person in the room, but the consumer is the one we're ultimately talking about. And if we piss them off, they're not going to buy our stuff. So advertising fundamentally needs to be respectful to consumers, and it needs to deliver a positive experience for them. You know, the Pew research that came out recently showed that 81% of consumers see the risks of giving their personal data higher than the benefits. And that's just a fundamentally broken value exchange. People don't see the value in giving their data. And so we can talk till the cows come home about how we can be clever with the data we've got and how we can, you know, collaborate to match my first party data with your first party data and increase our reach. But if we're fundamentally disrespecting the consumer's right to not be tracked, then I don't think we're really fixing the problem that got us into this mess in the first place. So I would suggest that when we're thinking about audience addressability, first party data is super valuable. They're people that have chosen to engage with you, chosen to be a part of your community. We see a lot of, you know, acquisitions in the D2C space right now because they have that direct relationship with consumers. They have the respect, they've earned the respect of their consumers to have that data. And so where it exists, first-party data is absolute gold dust. But where it doesn't, you know, how we build great relationships with consumers is through great user experience, meaningful brands, and beautiful creative and thoughtful creative. And couple that with brilliant context and fantastic journalism, and that's where our industry really shines.
That's an interesting sort of segue to the contextual conversation. It really links in quite nicely with Amy's point that if you're going to think about this from a consumer point of view, then what type of advertising do consumers actually not just tolerate, but potentially embrace or enjoy or, you know, inspire them to go on and buy stuff? Jack, what's your perspective on that, dealing with, you know, certainly a high volume of clients that have probably got a different point of view on contextual depending on what it is they're trying to achieve?
Yeah, you know, just to add to another stat to the study Amy mentioned, I think 48% of consumers have actually stopped buying a service from a company because they felt that they have had their data, you know, misused or misrepresented. So it is a challenge, and the industry does need to kind of get better, right? The legislators kind of when I set out on the whole GDPR and then moving into, you know, to CCPA and a few other bits and pieces, they had a point. I mean, they never wrote a lot of these legislation bits around kind of, you know, we don't trust the ad industry. They wrote it more about we want data to be more secure and we want people to respect privacy a bit more. And that point is kind of carried through into the industry, and it's evolved into many different applications. So we are kind of left, you know, with effectively four different solutions, being your first party data deployment, which, you know, is always going to be great. The Google Sandbox is a big talking point to the current date, and then shared IDs and contextual. Contextual definitely is seeing a massive ride. A lot more people are testing it. We're seeing a lot more providers come forth and, you know, all of a sudden say, oh, we can do this, right? We're a bit cautious about who we work in the space. We'd rather kind of talk directly to publishers and say to them, right, you know, how are you classifying your content? What kind of brand safety measurements have you put on? What are you doing in this space? So working very, very closely with publishers to do that. But we also then have been working with publishers and partners that we've worked with over many years, right? So whilst, yes, there's this massive explosion, who we engage with and how we approach the situation hasn't really changed all that much, but the importance of it has obviously come to light. But the end piece to this is obviously the measurement, right? And that's where we need to adapt a little bit as, you know, as an industry, as buyers, as publishers, we all need to kind of understand that there is going to be a little bit more modeling taking place in the attribution space. There's going to be a little bit more machine learning, you know, in terms of how we classify content and all of that. And a lot more automation is going to ultimately have to take place. Because when it comes to something like contextual, it's awfully difficult to validate the individual page levels, right? So it's a very easy sell. So I'm talking about shooting, so that could be very good. That could be shooting at a goal, you know, playing football, or it could be something tragic. So using it as a blanket keyword, well, that's a problem. But using semantics and, you know, machine learning and classifying pages, great. So very easy sell. But how do I now go across 10,000 websites and actually qualify that each one of those placements were correct? And those are the kind of challenges that we're still facing within the contextual space. And we haven't solved them all. We are testing them. We are trying to see kind of what the effects are on measurement, what is the effect on scale and targeting, all of that. So it definitely is seeing a massive increase, but I don't think it is the only solution. I think there are quite a few more pieces that we can do, particularly still in the data space, but you know, when I advocate to use data, I say that strictly under the sense that we need to do it in a privacy and compliant way, respecting consumers, because we have seen the numbers. They show clearly that people are not happy. You know, we're the victims of our own success. We got so good at doing this that we never really stopped to ask, should we be doing it, right? And now we've been told you cannot do it. So we need to listen, we need to adapt, we need to evolve. We're going to have to trust in the technology a little bit more, and we need to kind of stop being so obsessed about this one-to-one.
So we do a lot of work in the APAC region, and very interestingly, there's quite a high degree of data sharing going on in many APAC countries, some of which is as a result of not having the same sort of legislative framework and environment, and others is that actually there is legislation in place, but consumers have this sort of unique understanding of the value exchange, and the perception is I give away my data and I get something for it.
And I would also add, you know, looking at consent rates from your CMPs, from you know, post GDPR, we can't use that as a metric to say, oh, well, 75% of people just say okay, consent, fine. Because if you actually look at how most CMPs tend to work, they're very obstructive and they say, cool, you can't see this content until you agree. And if you say, well, I don't want to agree, you sometimes have to click more and go through 10 different like steps, and it really is too challenging. So it's far easier just to say, get out of my way, I want to read this. So we haven't actually solved the problem to date, right? So when we look at our current consent rates, they're not good enough. Then the numbers that we see are actually artificially inflated, because we're still guilty of building an ecosystem where we're trying to kind of force the consumer to agree just so I can, you know, get better at, because I want to get a higher CPM because of that addressability. And that's not right. And I think as we move into, you know, Feb 2022 and onwards, we're going to have to see a massive change, because the technology is fundamentally going to change. And ultimately, that's a good thing, because the data is going to become better, the consent is going to become more trusted, and everyone's going to kind of want to partake. So that the idea of I give you my data in return for free content will become more validated and much better.
Emma, you're going to come in on that.
Well, yes. So first of all, I absolutely agree with Amy, and we don't talk about the consumer enough, and we don't talk about the audience enough, and yet we're talking about audience addressability, and we forget that the key word there is audience. I think we have lost this, I guess, fundamental value exchange and respect for each other, right? So So I totally agree with all of this. And we have become victims of our own success. And the reason we have things like GDPR and all those things is because, you know, we became too successful. It depends on your definition of success. You know, there is also a job to be done as an industry in being more transparent. And we've been talking about transparency a lot, and a lot of that is within the supply chain. But I also think there's a job within the industry to be more transparent with our consumer or our audience from a, you know, at all levels, which is really be clear about why we need your data. I think that, you know, I did a bit of a survey amongst my friends, and these are, you know, relatively intelligent people of a certain age who've been on the internet for a very long time. And people forget that the content is paid for by the advertising.
Mm.
You want great content, but it doesn't come for free. You know, you still got to pay the journalist. Even those new papers that have gone totally digital now, it's not free. There's still journalists at the end of that. You know, and you've also got infrastructure costs. I mean, that's less sexy, obviously. But so I think we have a job to do as an industry to rebuild that trust, but also be a lot more transparent with the consumer about this stuff isn't free. Now, a lot of publishers are taking a route where, you know, they're diversifying their business models, which is absolutely a smart thing to do. You know, so a lot of them have got advertising plus subscription plus a multitude of other things. I think The Guardian obviously has donations. I think, you know, that's a very interesting route. And I think it's been very successful from what I've read the last time that they spoke about it. So lots of publishers are diversifying their revenue streams, but still fundamentally the majority of their revenue comes from advertising. And so they have a responsibility to be much more transparent with their audience and their consumer about why advertising is important. And then the consumer can make a decision, right? I want to pay for content, in which case, fair enough, go and do a subscription model and do all those things. Or, you know, am I prepared to understand that this great content, hopefully, that they're consuming has to be paid for somehow? And the majority of it is from advertising. Now, it doesn't mean that all advertising is good. It still has to be good advertising. But I do think there is that value exchange, and you're getting something, hopefully, that's really important to you. So back to Amy's point around building a robust value exchange. But I do think that, you know, there needs to be more transparency also with the publisher to the consumer to say, this is why we have advertising, you know, and this is why we need some level of data so that we can provide you with not only a good content experience, but a great advertising experience.
Amy, what's your point of view? I'm guessing you feel quite passionate about a lot of this.
Yeah, I do actually. And I mean, Jacques, I love your point around how we're manipulating the consumer even when we ask for their consent right now. It's such a good point. You know, the dark patterns in the design UX that incentivizes people to press consent because it's the easiest possible route. That's not respectful. You're never going to enter into a positive conversation with consumers when they already feel manipulated. Emma, to your point, if we were just more frank and honest and said, you know, we're not going to put fancy dark patterns so that you give us our consent out of annoyance, but we're going to just say really simply, your data is valuable and therefore it will help us pay our journalists. It's a really, really positive evolution of that conversation, I think. For me, I think we just want to shift the relationship with consumer information from data privacy and the sort of the minimum legal requirements of GDPR and the ilk into data ethics. And that will really help establish a more respectful and more positive relationship with the consumer. For me, data ethics comes down to three basic principles. The first is around honest, clear, easily accessible information, exactly to your point, Jacques, on the dark patterns and manipulative systems that we might use to capture data. So being super honest and transparent is principle one. Principle two is about that value exchange and respecting the value that the user brings to the table. And then principle three is about active data ownership. If I consent once, I want to be able to change my mind. I want to know where that data is stored. I want to be able to say when it is and isn't acceptable to use that data. So having a much more active and accessible way for consumers to manage their own consent. There are companies that have tried this and failed because, unfortunately, data isn't sexy and consumers don't care on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, you've seen a lot of companies come and go that give you Amazon vouchers for your data or, you know, get you deals, and it's never quite worked. I don't think we've quite nailed it yet. But, you know, fundamentally, if we're thinking about data ethics, that is a crucial building block. is having that control in the consumer's hands. So yeah, I think there's three things we can focus on there. I actually was on the panel that helped the Conscious Advertising Network build their consent manifesto. So the Conscious Advertising Network has six manifestos across the ad industry, and the consent piece was one that I sort of led on, and we did some really interesting work around how we can shift from data privacy to data ethics. So that might be something to check out if this is something that your readers are interested in. Readers, listeners.
I think they can read too, though. That's good news. I'm really enjoying listening to some of the terminology and language that you're using, Amy. The idea that perhaps we could start to instill that across the industry, almost as a bit of a discipline, like you said. Let's move from data privacy to data ethics. Let's start talking about, you know, sort of upholding an advertising and marketing industry that we could be proud of, rather than just navigating our way around obstacles. Because we talk a lot about the degree to which consumers care about how their data is being used. My opinion is that oftentimes when people allegedly don't care, it's because we've created a scenario where it makes it really difficult for them to care too much, because it's very hard to see where your data is being stored or to understand it, or, you know, a little bit in the, similar to the example that you gave, Jack, you're in a hurry to get access to something and you're thinking, even though I'd like to control my data, the way you're using my data at this point, I know you're going to ask me like 15 questions from here onwards and I don't have time for it or whatever. It'd be great to sort of change the fundamentals, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. The third point around kind of, you know, the ability to change my mind, I agree with all three principles. I think they're lovely starting points, and kind of we could look at how we can adopt those across the board. But the third one is awfully difficult, because if I said to you now, who has data on you? You wouldn't know. And in the same way, if I went to a brand or I went to a publisher or an SSP or DSP, it doesn't really matter, and say to them, what information do you have on me? They probably won't be able to tell me either, because the system wasn't really built to individual level where you can make those kind of decisions. It's always been a numbers game, aggregating large volumes of data, being a little bit more efficient, being a little bit more accurate, and then driving a slightly better return on investment. That's always been the thought process. Now, in order to get it to that next level, we need to have some place to go to effectively say, hi, I am, you know, Jacques, where's my data? Who has it? And everyone has to openly put their cards on the table and do it. But doing that, you're ultimately creating someone that needs to be quite well trusted and rather independent. And as an industry, we haven't quite got that right yet, you know. And I mean, this is maybe where Google's approach, you could argue, is probably the better of the lot. I mean, they, on the 8th of March, they said they're not going to support any of these third-party identifiers. They said it's going to go, okay, we're just going to go with our little approach and the cohort, the flock bit, and then the fledge bit, which for retargeting and all of that. It's a very clever approach in the sense that everything lives locally on the browser, so nothing gets ported off anywhere else. Someone else actually has your data. It really just makes the decision whether or not you go into the auction based on either interest-based or individual targeting-based. The clever thing about all of that is that there's no individual email address, no data's passed, the files are with you. I don't get your browser history or any of that information. It almost makes it a little bit more privacy-centric in a way. So it does work, but obviously it raises a big question to how well is it going to work. And I think there we're all kind of worried, but also optimistic at the same time.
And Jack, as you say, trust is the absolute most fundamental element. We need someone who's trustworthy at the center of this new ecosystem we're building. And I just don't think Google has that trust, you know, like,
even I would agree with that, but who does?
But even, you know, like the recent leak with the Bernanke project, where it's essentially insider trading using their publisher knowledge to impact their clients' buys, like these things erode the trust in them, and I just don't like the idea of building another monopoly for them.
I think the other thing might be as well, because you mentioned the word dependent, actually that's the key thing. And in this scenario, Google's not independent.
Oh, absolutely
actually,
not.
Actually,
it can't be a trade desk, it can't be a Google, it can't be a Facebook, it can't be any of those guys. It has to be, I don't know, the IAB, or I don't know. We have to find someone, right?
Exactly.
But at the same time, when you identify that you know, mystical unicorn, we then all need to stand in line and we all need to say, this is the one we're going to back. It cannot work with just a selection of publishers or a selection of buyers. The only way any of this will ever work is if you have universal adoption and everyone kind of stands in line and says, this is the way we're going to do things. We are going to try and do it in a better, more compliant way.
This is a global industry. The internet, by its very nature, is borderless to some degree. So it's really hard to get one universal ID is almost a misnomer, because there isn't one and it's not universal. Because we have all of these, you know, we have local regulations and we have language barriers and we have a multitude of things that maybe perhaps stop this kind of one big thing. And I think that's, you know, if we think about the challenges that publishers face, it's been very hard to compete with the walled gardens because of the scale that they have, because of the audience data that they own, because of the addressability that they can provide. And I think that's also a challenge that, you know, publishers are trying to deal with among, you know, on top of everything else that they're trying to deal with. The thing that we're, you know, certainly starting to see now is, again, something that was sort of in fashion a while back but went out of fashion has now come back, which is the publishers. And we talked about this at the beginning, Jacques, with, you know, the more collaboration that we're seeing across the industry and publishers collaborating together to, you know, to build consortia so that they can compete. And have a great value exchange. You know, there's a couple that spring to mind. The Ozone Project in the UK has done a really good job of doing that. NetID in Germany has done a really good job of doing that. You know, they're also in a very difficult position. They're trying to compete against these big, you know, multinational corporations that hold a ton of data. And that's really tough for them.
I don't know what feels like for each of you from your point of view, you know, from where you're sitting in the industry. I'm particularly interested to know, you know, Jacques, if you are having any conversations with brands and advertisers where they feel, you know, very, I don't know, passionate about moving outside the walled garden environments, notwithstanding the value they get from those environments, but accepting that actually they need to go elsewhere to look for alternative audiences.
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, at Starcom take quite an agnostic approach to how we approach data, tech, and media. We're more kind of focusing around very much to, as Amy was saying, about, you know, good content, making meaningful moments with individual consumers, right? We're branded as the human experience company. We want to make sure that when people have a touch point with a brand, it's a positive one, right? And all the elements are aligned. So you're not doing that, you know, race to the bottom, cheap CPA ROI kind of measurement where there's a lot of questionable data going into that. As it comes to kind of which tech we use to deliver on those, we fully advocate experimenting and kind of looking at all the different pieces. So we work across the board with all of the major DSPs. We work with all the different data providers, SSPs, and all of that. So we have regular conversation, you know, with everyone involved. And where there is a solution that you know, can answer the brief, we're always going to surface it. And it doesn't always come from one of the walled gardens as such, so a Google or an Amazon or a Facebook. There's a lot of opportunities, a lot of players in the space. It's quite complicated sometimes. We're always up for testing, but at the foundation of it, what we're trying to do is to always make sure that when we're delivering media, we're doing it to actually make a meaningful impact, right? To really build that relationship for our brand between them and their consumers, right? And we do that as a facilitation by getting all of the right players in the room, talking to, you know, such as all your lovely souls on this call and a few others, and get them together and collaborate together and bringing them all closer. You know, which tech sometimes really is just is not really the main question. It's more kind of, how are we going to structure this? Who are we working together with? How are we going to collaborate to deliver on this?
Who's supporting buyers and who is supporting the sell side in this landscape of fragmentation where things are changing rapidly? And where actually, you know, especially when we have conversations like this, there appears to be a general sense of agreement that this is a real opportunity for the industry to improve and to, you know, to move much more towards the type of industry and experience that Amy was describing.
But one thing I have been pondering on listening to both of you speak is the incredibly positive outcome of this whole trend where we are shifting more towards supporting quality journalism and supporting the free internet and getting more money away from the walled gardens and back to those quality publishers. And, you know, it used to be that you could find a user on the New York Times and go target them again on some dodgy long tail of sites that are super low quality. Whereas now we're seeing a shift back to just contextually focusing on the New York Times. And one thing I would just flag or add to that conversation is we have to be sure that we are redefining what quality publishers mean, because if we go completely back to contextual and if we go completely back to the named established quality, you know, quality news brands, we might cut out a lot of local news, a lot of independent publishers, a lot of smaller, more diverse groups who, you know, have found a place on the internet where they have a community and a voice, but it's never going to hit the reach and scale that Jack clients are looking for. So being able to collaborate with people like the Ozone Project, who are building together these consortiums and helping us pull in smaller, brilliant, independent journalists that are doing fantastic work, but would be part of that long tail that's going to suffer when the cookie goes away.
Emma.
Yeah, I think that, Amy, you make a really good point. We don't want to lose all of these smaller, you know, some would say niche publishers, because they obviously have a purpose. And actually, some of those have got a great value exchange with their audiences because they're not on, you know, they're not en masse. I think in terms of, I'm going to come at it from a technology perspective, advertisers, data providers, publishers and consumers, you know, choose your tech partners very wisely, choose your, and I think that's really, really important. Choose like, you need to choose your tech partner the way you know, it should be a long-term relationship. This should not be a transactional fly-by-night relationship. So do your due diligence when you're working with your technology partners. You know, choose those partners who are going, who's got skin in the game on your behalf, who do care about supporting your business, be that the advertising side of the business or the supply side of the business. And I think that's fundamentally important, because this, you need a partner that's going to help you navigate what it looks like today. But you're also going to need a partner that's going to help you future-proof your business, because what we are seeing today is not the end game here. You know, we haven't even got to the situation where the cookie's deprecated. So we're not at the end game.
I agree with that one. If you, you know, when particularly we're talking about long tail and we're talking about, you know, some of the bits that are not necessarily too transparent and all of that, one of the questions you should always ask when looking at any digital execution buyers, each player within that space, What are they adding? What is their value that they bring to the table? So I fully agree with that, right? And that applies to the publishers, the SSPs, DSPs, data providers, absolutely everyone. If you need to kind of focus on it, and it's a lot of work. It's not a lot of the information, unfortunately, doesn't surface quite easily. So you need to have a really good buying team that can help you and advise and kind of, you know, make sure that when looking at where's my $1 going, that it's going with people that you know support your business and kind of have that open relationship with you, or looking out for not just their own interest, but for you as well, and kind of taking the time to actually add value to each one of your buyers.
Personally, I really enjoyed the idea of moving the conversation on from consumer consent to ethical advertising. It was also good to make mention early on in the podcast of measurement and the challenges yet unsolved there. There's plenty more to discuss under that topic, maybe for another podcast. Thanks for listening.